JAX File, the ultimate Jaguars podcast with Nate Lundy.
And welcome to another edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Thank you for being here. Week one in the National Football League is in the books. We now get a chance to look back at week one and also start to preview week two. We will do so by checking in on the team, figuring out the very latest injuries, expectations, the highs and lows of week one. Then we'll go around the NFL. We'll do that with the NFL Network's Brian Billick. And then in overtime this week, speaking of the NFL Network, one of the newest faces there on the NFL Network, Mike Garofolo, will join me for overtime, a six-pack of questions. It all gets started right now on the NFL Files.
The Big Interview.
From the Associated Press on Twitter, at AP Mark Long. It is Mark Long joining us to talk a little Jacksonville football. Opening up against the Packers, we've got a lot of things we can dive into individually, Mark, but your overall, maybe 30,000-foot view of how the Jags played in the game.
Yeah, it's really hard to come away from that game and not think the Jags have made progress and maybe even turn the corner, if not coming close to turning a corner. I mean, this is a team that went 12-36 the previous 3 years, 14-50 the previous 4 years. So there hasn't been a lot of anything that you can hang your hat on. And last year they, made some all strides offensively, but there's no question that game yesterday, when you look at both sides of the ball, they did enough to win the game, had a really good shot at winning it there in the end, and just came up short against a team that is a perennial playoff team, has gone to the playoffs 7 straight times and is considered widely picked to be, to win its division this year and maybe even be in the Super Bowl. So, there are no moral victories in the NFL, but if anything is as close to a moral victory as possible, it's what the Jags did yesterday.
Mark, I noticed that really when you look at the national narrative of that week one game, it was far more about the Packers, about Aaron Rodgers not having a good game, about, Jordy Nelson not really being much of a deep threat. It seemed to be a lot about what the Packers did wrong. How much of that do you credit, though, to the Jacksonville defense, the emphasis this team has put on building a stronger defense, and how they played overall?
Yeah, I think it's probably a mixture of the two. I think there's probably some reality to Aaron Rodgers walking away from that game and going, wow, that wasn't what I wanted. Even though he made some unbelievable plays, just some ridiculous vintage Aaron Rodgers stuff when you're talking about eluding pressure and making throws that guys aren't supposed to make, getting rid of the ball with people dragging him to the ground. I mean, just vintage Aaron Rodgers. And, so there was that, but I get what he's saying in terms of they had some communication issues. They were a little sluggish to start out of the gate. The last possession was, he called it embarrassing because, they had a chance to close out the game and ended up having to punt it back to the Jags. So there were a lot of factors. And, I think in his defense, he didn't play much in the preseason. Jordy Nelson didn't play at all. So for them, this is really game one in 20 months together. So that, it's silly to not think there's going to be a little bit of rust or a little bit of get to know you on their part from playing a game like that, a full 60 minutes for the first time in what seems like forever. But there's no question Jacksonville's defense also to credit. They had pretty good coverage on Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb all day. Didn't get a lot of pressure on Rodgers. Part of that was the scheme. They brought 3, dropped 8 a lot, didn't really blitz very often. And their goal was to keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket and try to cover the receivers downfield and not give up anything big.
Mark, is there some frustration for fans when you look at the rushing and the running game for Jacksonville in this game? Because I know they wanted to try to run the ball better, maybe not have Blake Bortles have to sling it around quite so much, and then they finish off the game with less than 50 yards rushing despite 26 carries. I know that's got to be a frustration. Was it a lack of performance on the offensive part? Is the offensive line not helping them out? What broke down?
Yeah, there's a little bit of everything there. I think the offensive line could have been better in the run game. Green Bay did a lot of run blitzing, so anytime Green Bay thought it was going to be a run or saw that it was going to be a run or guessed that it was going to be a run, they run blitzed and brought, 6 guys so that made it very difficult front to run against. And then I think the big thing is the Jags were down to T.J. Yeldon, and they didn't go into this game thinking they were just going to have T.J. Yeldon running it 20 times. They really wanted to go in here and split the carries with Chris Ivory, a 1,000-yard rusher last year with the Jets, and T.J. Yeldon. And then all of a sudden, the day of the game, Chris Ivory wakes up and has got some discomfort and ends up in the hospital and misses the game. So it kind of throws a wrench in your whole plans of running the ball, taking advantage of the heat, keeping Aaron Rodgers on the sideline, all those things that the Jags wanted to do. Part of it got thrown right out the window when Chris Ivory had to be sent to the hospital.
I talked about the offensive line as it pertains to the running game, but what about the offensive line in terms of pass protection? We know Bortles got brought down to the ground 3 times. What were they doing wrong?
Yeah, actually, for the most part, the offensive line played pretty well. You know, they did. I think they brought five or more pressures, something like 16 or 17 times, the Packers. So they got to him. But, you know, for that offensive line, and especially when they're trailing late in the game and chasing some points, 3 sacks is not that's not a bad day at the office for that offensive line. I mean, remember, look at it this way. Bortles has been sacked 106 times the last 2 seasons, the most of any quarterback in their first 2 years coming out of college. The Jags have given up a league-high 122 sacks overall the last 2 seasons. So 3 sacks is actually better than what they've averaged. So there was some improvement there, even though, you know, there were some sacks.
Mark, after the game, I know that Allen Robinson was asked about some non-calls, things like that, in terms of the physical play down the field, and he kind of shrugged it off, said it wasn't about the calls, said he needed to make some big plays and adjust his physicality to the game. Is that any kind of a knock on his game, that he's not physical enough? Is that something he needs to step up in those kind of opportunities when the officials are not going to throw a flag?
It's funny, I was standing there when he said that, and I just kind of rolled my eyes. Listen, he's an unbelievably physical receiver. I don't know what level he could take it to after, you know, to what he's already. I mean, he's an unbelievable physical guy. He fights off guys at the line of scrimmage, uses his hands really well downfield, out jumps guys. So I don't really know. I think it was more him taking the high road and going, listen, I can't say anything here that's going to help me, benefit me, other than ripping these guys get fined. So I'm going to take the high road and, you know, I'll just make some crazy comment about I need to step up my physicality. I don't think that's at all the problem. I think, you know, we saw it a little bit last season, late in the season. We're certainly seeing it in game week one here, was that this is a guy who, maybe because he's so physical, that he's, you know, he just doesn't, he's not getting calls because he's physical, and then so people are being physical with him, and then he's not getting a call. So I don't know what he could do better, but the reality is, there were at least 3, maybe more, where he should have been. It was clearly pass interference, and they should have been flagged. And it was probably the big takeaway for the coaches, general manager, everybody else in the Jags organization, where they were not happy with the number of flags thrown in their direction.
Dante Fowler finally gets out on the field for a regular season game. Mark, how would you grade out his performance against the Packers?
Yeah, it's probably an incomplete, I would think, if I had to grade that. I think the big problem is, as I mentioned before, the Jags weren't going in here with Aaron Rodgers with the intent of let's blitz him, let's bring the house, it was really more of a contain. They wanted to keep him in the pocket and wanted to keep everything in front of him and make him throw from the pocket. He is one of the most dangerous quarterbacks in the NFL when he's on the move. Certainly rolling to his right, can make a lot of things happen, and that's when you lose that's when you lose the receivers down the field and they make big plays after big plays. Well, in this case, you know, for Dante Fowler and everybody up front for the Jags, the goal was to keep Aaron Rodgers in the pocket and make him earn it from there. And for the most part, they did. I mean, listen, they got him 1 time for 0 yards on a scramble. But when you can hold Aaron Rodgers to 199 yards passing, mm-hmm. you know, I think you take that, you know, any day of the week and 16 games out of the season.
Absolutely. I think you're right. I think if somebody just looked at the box score, you see Aaron Rodgers under 200, you're feeling pretty good about the chances that the team on the other side of the scoreboard got the win. Do you give the same incomplete to Jalen Ramsey also stepping out there for the first time?
No, I actually give him a pretty good grade. I think he said after the game that he didn't allow a completion his way. And whether that's true or not, I'm not so sure about. I know Cobb had 6 and and Jordy Nelson had six. None of them were really huge, but still, I mean, somebody, I gotta imagine somebody caught a ball in front of him, and there was a play that showed up somewhere that I saw where he was beaten on a play that probably should have been a touchdown, and it wasn't. But listen, he's been everything the Jags had hoped, and maybe even more, as the fifth overall pick this year. I mean, he comes in and starting right away, unbelievable physicality at the line of scrimmage, great coverage down the field. And then he's pretty good on special teams too. And he almost got Aaron Rodgers on a sack, was pulling him down.
Yep.
And Aaron Rodgers managed to get rid of it and threw a touchdown pass to Davante Adams, which I think the Jags are still, even today, are saying, how did he do that?
Well, that's what Aaron Rodgers does. Mark, as you look ahead now to week two, the game on the road against the Chargers, I know I was surprised by the fact that the Chargers looked pretty good against the Chiefs. Early thoughts from you, Mark, as the Jags get ready to hit the road.
Yeah, I mean, a huge challenge for the Jags, mostly from a cross-country standpoint. They've never won in San Diego. They've only got two wins all time in 21 years as a franchise on the West Coast, and I think those came in 97 and 2004. So it's been, a dozen years since they've won out there. So that's the challenge for this franchise. Can they bottle up what they did at home, the success they had against Green Bay, and then take it on the road and do something against a team that is not the caliber that the Packers are, and a team that's probably reeling a little bit from its own loss and reeling a little bit from the loss of Keenan Allen. Their top receiver's out for the year now. So it's a game Jacksonville needs. It's a game they almost have to have, really, when you look at it in terms of how awful this franchise has been for a number of years, particularly in September and October. I think under Gus Bradley, they're 1-11 now in the month of September. So they really need to go get a win on the road, cross country, in September, and get this thing kind of turned around and not have that feeling of, oh boy, here we go again.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I think you can't, especially with this franchise, you can't do an 0-2 start again, because I do think that's one of those things, at least from a fan base standpoint, it starts to snowball downhill emotionally, given how many times they've gone through it. He's on Twitter at AP Mark Long from the Associated Press covering the Jags for us. It's Mark Long. Mark, really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Anytime.
From Mark, we go to the coach, Brian Billick, coming up next.
Around the league.
It is time for us to go around the NFL, and we do that each week with the coach, Brian Billick. You find him on Twitter at Coach Billick, and as he is each week, he's brought to us by our friends at SeatGeek. Make sure you've got the SeatGeek app on your mobile device, or that you're visiting SeatGeek.com. Make sure you, your family, your friends are always getting the best deal on tickets, and you do that with the SeatGeek app. Coach, let's start here with the Monday night game. A lot of people surprised not only for Jared Goff not to start, but not even active. I know I'm asking you to speculate, but why do you believe the number one overall pick is not out there for the Rams, given how inept their offense looked overall?
Well, you can only assume that Jeff Fisher doesn't think he's ready. Let's go back to Jeff's history. When they drafted Steve McNair back in the 90s, he didn't actually start until his third season. They carried him along, felt like they needed to nurture him. They had two losing seasons leading up to that, and then he finally found his way into the starting lineup. If Jared Goff is not better than Case Keenum, they got a real problem, because obviously they were betting on playing great defense, running the ball, which they didn't last night. Todd Gurley only had 47 yards in 17 carries. And Case Keenum, maybe you can play that formula where he was only 17-35, but he had two interceptions. If you're going to play that play great defense, run the ball formula, you got to run the ball and can't turn it over. So if they're not going to play a lot better than that, you got to put Jared Goff in just to get the experience.
Coach, is the Niners defense improved, or was this just a matter of the Rams being that bad?
Well, we're going to find out. We don't know, because the Rams offense was basically so inept. We're going to have to see how it pans out. It's likely they're a little bit better than we all thought they were going to be, but their roster, when you look at it, you have some question marks. notwithstanding even the offensive side. Obviously, what Chip Kelly's doing, they have a lot of confidence. They obviously look pretty good. But we're going to find out, particularly this week, when they're going to play the Seattle Seahawks. We're going to find out more about L.A. and the fact that they play the Seattle Seahawks. In terms of San Francisco 49ers, the next step for them, obviously, is to, can they indeed go on the road? And it's a tall task because they're going across the country to the Carolina Panthers. Now you're going to see a legitimate run offense. You're going to see maybe the best quarterback or the best athlete in the game in Cam Newton and a very, very good Carolina defense. So it's going to be a test for the 49ers. They go across the country and put that kind of performance together against Carolina, then we're all going to say, nope, we were all kind of wrong. This team's pretty good.
For some people, looking at the AFC, the Steelers were a bit of a sleeper pick for some experts, Coach. Did you see that out of them in their Monday night contest against Washington? Could they contend in the AFC?
Well, I've on record, I had Pittsburgh down as my Super Bowl team. I think they could be, if, and this is a huge if they can stay healthy. And that's the key. And we're talking about Ben Roethlisberger, obviously Antonio Brown. That offensive line, which is healthy and looks spectacular. You know, yeah, Le'Veon Bell's not there, but D'Angelo Williams, let's remember last year he cranked off 127 yards in the opener as well. So D'Angelo Williams is a good, physical, you know, Pittsburgh Steeler type of runner that they got to love doing, you know, seeing what he's doing for them. And defensively, I think they're improved. They're healthy, although you see Ryan Shazier may be hurt. I go back to the injury situation. Of course, that's true of any team. But they were obviously spectacular. Washington's suspect on defense. But I still feel like Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the AFC. They, too. Okay, now you got to follow up with it because you've got a Cincinnati team coming into town that looked pretty good and it's open.
When we look at the AFC, Coach, and you know this as well as anyone, you can't bet against Bill Belichick. There were those that said if the Patriots could go through their first four games without Tom Brady and be 2-2, that everybody would be happy. But based on how they performed against Arizona, is it out of the realm of possibilities that they might be 3-1 or even 4-0 by the time Brady comes back?
Yeah, and I was one of them on our show, Game Day First, for the NFL Network. We were talking about it, and I believe all of us picked Arizona to win, and to a man, we said, but we're nervous about it, because anytime you pick against the Patriots and Belichick, and particularly a Brady-less Belichick, you have a little bit of confidence. They come back and bite you every time. So, no, this bodes well for them. For them, they don't look at it that way, and he's the master at one game at a time. They got Miami coming to town, so it's a divisional game, which is important for them. But I'd be surprised if anybody picks the Patriots to lose to Miami at home.
Speaking of Miami, they went on the road in really just a defensive slugfest there against Seattle. What did you see out of the Dolphins? And also, Coach, what did you see out of Seattle?
Well, and that I was impressed with that. I mean, that's a tough place to go. We talked last week about the value I put on the ability to go on the road and win, particularly in an opener, and particularly when you're talking about Miami going to Seattle. They'd been better off going to London. It would be an easier trip for them. That's a tough slot. The defense was impressive. I think it was an example of Russell Wilson this year. I think it's going to have to be finally a 500-plus throw quarterback. He's been under that his first few years because they haven't had to do more than that. Play great defense, run the ball. Not that they're not going to continue to play great defense. They ran the ball okay, but Russell Wilson threw the ball 43 times. And I think we're going to see more of that this year because they're going to need for him to throw the ball in order to get the win.
We know it was against the Cleveland Browns, but at the same time, Carson Wentz came out, a guy that just a few weeks ago, Coach, wasn't even expected to start because Sam Bradford was there, and he wound up with 278 yards, a couple of touchdowns. What did you think of the rookie's performance?
Yeah, very impressive. I mean, particularly for a rookie, you just want to see, are they overwhelmed? Do they look like they can function? And both he and Dak Prescott played very, very well. It was interesting to watch them. It was the same game plan. Both opened up with a lot of boots and outside the pocket, to settle them down, make it an easy read, and then eventually evolved where they had to throw more from the pocket. Now, and it's good for their development. I don't know that you want a rookie throwing the ball 37 times a game like Wentz did or 45 times like Dak Prescott. But from a development standpoint, because that puts them on a 600-throw season, which would be great for their development as a quarterback, but in terms of winning games and that profile, that would be a steep curve for these rookies. But I tell you what, they looked like they were up to it. Where you saw it was down on third down. Both struggled a little bit in third down in those critical areas. Although Carson Wentz in the red zone looked pretty good. So you had to be pleased, even though, of course, Dallas lost. You had to be pleased, both teams, with the starts of their rookies, Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz.
Kansas City Chiefs pull off the biggest comeback for them in 56 years with their franchise. Is this a legit AFC West contender? I would assume so, based on what we've seen out of Andy Reid and Alex Smith managing the game.
Oh, absolutely. And it was who didn't play for them that's significant, that they all but at home could come back that way. That'll give them a lot of confidence. Now, obviously, Denver looks to be very solid. Huge win by the Oakland Raiders in New Orleans. They're going to be a factor as well. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think this is going to be a very tight division, but certainly that bodes well for Kansas City. If nothing else, give them the confidence to know, yeah, even without Jamal Charles and some of the other players we didn't have there, we're a pretty good football team.
You just brought up the Raiders, and it's been an interesting conversation in looking at Oakland, because there were those that have criticized their opening game, saying, well, wait, this was supposed to be a team that was extremely strong on defense, and here they gave up 34 points. But the counter to that, coach, is, well, just about everybody gives up at least 30 points facing Drew Brees.
Yeah, if you're going to dismiss anybody, everybody that gives up a lot of points and a lot of yards, Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints, at home in that dome, you can, you know, check off pretty much the entire league. You know, this guy's pretty good. I was very impressed with Oakland's ability to go on the road in one of the toughest places to play of all football, particularly in the opener, and to do it in the way they did, to come back the way they did, to go for it on two-point conversion twice and to get it. That bodes very well for that team, resiliency on that team. And, yeah, certainly some things, the big plays they're going to have to cut down on. I know that was disappointing for Ken Norton Jr. and his defense, but they're not the Lone Ranger in that regard when it comes to New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints defense continues. They're going to have a tough time this year because Drew Brees and Sean Payton know once again they got to score a minimum of 30 points a game or they got no chance.
Takes a lot of guts to do what Coach Jack Del Rio did at the end of the game. Coach, do you think you could have done the same thing if you were coaching?
Well, I've told in a lot of interviews that I'm doing talk about, you typically, particularly going on the road, you'll get with the staff and say, okay, guys, what's our mentality going to be at the end of the game? We've got to go for two. I mean, you put that down specifically at what do you guys think? It's different at home than it is possibly on the road. And go through the mindset of Jack Del Rio. Okay, I'm going to take a 50-50 chance of getting a two-point play. Or what are my odds if I go into overtime in New Orleans on the road that late in the game against that crowd and, oh, by the way, against the Hall of Famer like Drew Brees? I kind of like my odds with the two-point play rather than putting it in Drew Brees' hand.
He's the coach, Brian Billick. We say it every week. If you spend 10, 15 minutes with the coach, you're a smarter football fan. He's brought to us every week here on the NFL Files podcast by SeatGeek. Make sure you've downloaded the SeatGeek app or visited SeatGeek.com. It's a great way for you to make sure if you're getting tickets to a sporting event or a concert that you're getting the absolute best deal for you and your friends. That's the SeatGeek app. Coach, appreciate the time as always, and we'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely.
Overtime.
For Overtime on the NFL Files, Mike Garofolo from NFL Network. First of all, Mike, congratulations on making the jump to NFL Network. We've got a six-pack of questions for you, rapid-fire style. Let's start here. After seeing what happened with Jack Del Rio, are we going to see more coaches go for two?
I don't think so. I think a lot of them are still conservative by nature, and Jack Del Rio is a more forward-thinking coach and has been for a while, so it doesn't shock me that he's the guy, and you know, there is an old adage, you play for the win on the road, you play for the tie at home, so maybe the situation, you know, bared out for that one, and the momentum that they had at the time. I just don't see that being something that all of a sudden coaches are going to start doing, because the minute they fail, they're going to be called upon as bozos.
All right, question number two in the six-pack. For you, the biggest surprise of week one?
Probably the Detroit Lions. I went up there and I heard all that positive talk about their offense and how they wouldn't miss Calvin Johnson, and everything I heard was that this offense actually, not that they'd be better off without Calvin Johnson, but for this offense, the way that they want to spread the ball around, nothing really runs through one person, so that they'd be able to kind of move that ball around. And you hear that and you go, yeah, but you're going to be without Calvin Johnson, so how is that possible? Well, you saw on display. Now, that's not the best defense they're going to face all year. It may be one of the worst, as a matter of fact. So they're going to have to continue to prove that. But to me, that was a surprise they were able to pull that one off.
All right, Mike, question number three. Does Larry Fitzgerald actually have a secret fountain of youth? And if so, how do you and I get some of it?
He is amazing. And it's all about how he takes care of his body and his dedication to the game. And it is up there with some of the greats of all time. And I don't know if this is going to be his last season. I think a lot of it's going to depend on what kind of success the Cardinals have and whether he thinks this team could you know, have more success a year from now. I don't think that decision's been made yet. I think it's a possibility, but at the very least, I think he could absolutely continue to play at a high level for beyond this season.
It's overtime on the NFL Files. Mike Garofolo from NFL Network with me. Follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, question number four, true or false, the Patriots will go 4-0 with Jimmy Garoppolo?
I'll go true. Yeah, just because they've got three more home games here, and then they catch Houston on a short week on the Thursday night game at home. So, I think it's a possibility, and sure, I'll ride with my somewhat similar namesake.
There you go. All right, question number five for you. Based on what you saw in week one, who wins the NFC East?
I'm still going Redskins, just because I didn't expect anybody to run away with it. I still don't. I think that's a terrific team that they played. I'm not going to overreact to that one. I do think that there are holes on that roster. I think there's things that they need to patch up, but I'm not going to overreact to that one. There's going to be the opposite of overreaction Monday, even though it's beyond Monday, but it's going to be the opposite of that, because I still believe that they're going to be the team that winds up coming out on top.
Mike Garofolo with me. Last question for you in our six-pack. If you had the choice, and obviously the athletic ability as well, Mike, if you had the choice, would you rather catch a touchdown from your favorite quarterback or sack your most hated rival quarterback?
Probably the TD, just because, you know, those guys, the skill position guys get all the glory, and then you get to do, well, I guess you can do a dance after the sack, but the end zone dances to me are always, there's more options down there amongst the fans and the goalposts and all that stuff. I'd even draw a penalty for using something as a prop.
All right, bonus answer to this one, Mike. Who would that quarterback be for you? Who's your favorite? Who would you want to be on the receiving end of?
My favorite of all time, I grew up watching Randall Cunningham, so that would have to be my guy.
There you go. Mike Garofolo with us on Overtime on the NFL Files. Make sure you watch him now that he's on NFL Network. Again, congratulations, and follow him on Twitter, at Mike Garofolo. Mike, appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me.
You got it, Nate.
Mike Garofolo, NFL Network, appreciate his time. As I mentioned, just made the jump from Fox to NFL Network, and prior to that, he had been with USA Today. So definitely moving up the ladder when it comes to covering football. Appreciate your time joining me this week on this edition of the NFL Files. My name is Nate Lundy. Talk to you next week right here.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsjoe.com.